In 1812, England desperately wanted to avenge her humiliating defeat in the American Revolution 31 years before. Her problem was that she had her hands full with Napoleon's France. So all she could do for the first couple of years of her second war with those Yankee doodles was use her 300-ship navy, the mightiest in the world, to interfere with our ocean commerce. But by the summer of 1814, Napoleon was in exile on Elba. Suddenly, England was the world's only superpower, with the best trained and best equipped troops anywhere. At last, she could punish the Americans who'd had the audacity to declare their independence and the astonishingly poor taste to challenge her in war yet again. The mistakes of 1776 would not be repeated. Instead of spreading too few redcoats over too much territory, Admiral Sir Alexander Cochrane devised a shock and awe plan to deploy overwhelming numbers of troops into a limited area, and he knew exactly where he wanted to strike first. Washington, D.C. fell to the British on August 24th. They looted and burned the White House and Capitol, then moved on to Baltimore, the center of shipping for the Middle States. Cochrane planned a two-prong attack. His armada of 22 warships sailed up the Chesapeake to Baltimore's harbor and laid siege to the city. Meanwhile, General Robert Ross and over 4,000 crack troops attacked from the landward side of town. Cochrane's flagship held an American prisoner, a Maryland physician named William Benness, whose only crime had been objecting to redcoat looting. The Benness family appealed to a prominent Washington attorney for help in securing the doctor's release. That lawyer's name was Francis Scott Key. Key was asked to sail directly into the British guns. There was no guarantee that he wouldn't be taken prisoner too. It would have been so easy for him to have told the Benness family, "I can't." But my friends, the word American ends in "I can." Saying "I can" has always been a vital part of the American character, and soon, Francis was tacking across Baltimore Harbor under a flag of truce. When Admiral Cochrane received him, Francis proved so persuasive that Dr. Benness was granted a parole and allowed to join Key in the sloop. But all these negotiations had taken time. The sun was about to set, which was the signal for the attack on Baltimore to commence. Key and Benness could not sail into the line of fire. They would have to spend the night tethered to an English ship. It was from this vantage point that Francis saw the red glare of the Congreve rockets as they sizzled overhead. There he also heard the thunderous explosions of the fused 190-pound bombs bursting in air. They were all aimed at tiny Fort McHenry, whose 30-by-42-foot American flag had provided a perfect sighting target for the naval gun crews. The attack continued into the early morning hours. Key understood that if Fort McHenry fell to the British, Baltimore was doomed. Dawn was breaking when the smoke and haze cleared enough for Francis to once again see the ramparts of Fort McHenry. He expected England's Union Jack to be flying above the fort. At the very least, he anticipated that the fort's 15-star American flag would have been hauled down. He couldn't know that British troops had been repulsed. General Ross himself had been killed, leading to confusion and disarray among the redcoats. The attack had failed, and even now, the English were starting to withdraw. But then, a gust of wind over Fort McHenry caused a rain-soaked and battle-scarred banner to wave in the breeze. Its meaning was unmistakable. Somehow, against overwhelming odds, the Doodles had won again. Francis took an envelope from his pocket and wrote a poem entitled, "The Defense of Fort McHenry." At the bottom, he scribbled, "To the tune of, to Anacreon in heaven." This was a curious choice in that Key had picked a bawdy and popular English drinking song. That's right, the melody for the Star Spangled Banner was borrowed from an English barroom favorite. The next day, Key's poem was published to immediate success. In 1931, it became our national anthem. Fort McHenry's original flag, now beautifully restored, is on display in the Smithsonian today. But you and I could have never sung that song if a Washington lawyer hadn't said, "I can." Only saying "I can" put Francis Scott Key in exactly the right place at exactly the right time to create the stirring prose treasured by every American. "Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars, through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?